and nobody else, so apologies. Welcome to Cabinet on this 1st of July 2021. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information England Regulations 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So, first off, item one, we have apologies from Richard Bailey, who unfortunately had an accident with his back. Have we got any other apologies? I think we're otherwise all in attendance. So, welcome to everyone else. Item two, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Can I particularly refer people to the grants section, the grants item, item six? If there are any organisations there, please by all means flag. So, Councillor Barclay.
Yeah, I would like to declare a personal interest in item six, Charnwood Grants, in respect of the Leicestershire Youth Sailing Association, as they have a Syston base, and I supported their application.
Thank you very much, Councillor Barclay. Councillor Boker.
The third item, Rectory Wildlife Garden, because I'm an honorary whatever down there.
Excellent. Honorary gardener.
Yeah, honorary something.
Right? Okay, thank you very much. Are there any, Councillor Poland?
Thank you, yeah. Interest in item six, as I supported FC Seagraves funding application. And also, do we need to declare as county councillors for item 10?
What we could do, given the original, let's be safe than sorry. What do you think, Chief Exec? So in which case, if we do a blanket declaration to Councillor Poland, myself, Councillor Barclay, and I think we're okay on that. So, yeah, let's just do that, just to be safer than sorry. Okay. Any other declarations that anyone needs to make? No? Okay, thank you very much. So we now go on to item three, which is leaders' announcements. I have no announcements this evening. You'll be relieved to hear. So we now go on to item four, which is the minutes of the previous meeting, which was held in this chamber on the 10th of June, 2021. Are there any points that anyone wishes to raise, or are you happy for that accurate? If you're happy that they are accurate, if you could say that you approve. That's everyone. Thank you very much. Those minutes are approved. We now go on to item five, which is questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. No questions have been submitted. So we're now on to the main part of the meeting, starting with item six, which is Charnwood Grants. So we have Julie Robinson. Good evening, Julie, who's Head of Neighbourhood Services, and also Verity Graham. Good evening, Verity. I didn't take the side off your car this evening, so... I did try, thank you, who's our Neighbourhoods and Partnerships Manager, who are going to assist with any questions relating to the report. Our lead member, Councillor Harper-Davis, if you'd like to say a few words as introduction, as always, we'll take the report as read, but if you'd like to say a few words before we raise any points for discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leader. So I'm really pleased to say this is the first round of grants, actually since lockdown, and also to bring to Cabinet for this year. So the report clearly sets out, it's quite an extensive report, the recommendations in relation to Charnwood Community and the Community Facilities Grant, the applicants that have been received in this round. We recognise the important role in the voluntary and community sector, which plays a big role in supporting the Council deliver our aims and objectives. The grant panels assess applications against the criteria outlined in Part B, paragraphs 1 to 8 of the report. The panel were pleased to see a wide-ranging and diverse set of applications. Certainly, I've never seen any as wide-ranging as these, as the newest lead member, with a number of new organisations applying for funding that we've not that hadn't previously applied. So, community facilities grant applications. So, three community facility applications were received in this round, and the grants panel recommending that both the Soar Valley Bowls Club and the Leicestershire Rutland Youth Sailing Association awarded a grant. And the application of the Ogai Divine Society is declined for the reasons set out in paragraph 32. So all in all, in summary, 17 community grant applications were received in this round, and you can see them set out in the report. And the grants panel recommending 13 of the applications are awarded. a grant, and four are declined for the reasons again set out in the report. In terms of assessing the applications, the grants panel worked very hard actually to look very closely at the need for the particular projects, who it's targeting, and the breakdown of the project funding, and determine whether the costs are realistic and whether it duplicates any existing service provision by those groups. The report has recommended support to a diverse set of projects that will benefit a wide sector of the community and that will support the voluntary sector organisations to continue to recover from the impact of COVID-19. So as you can see them, thank you very much for Julie and the team to actually looking through and assessing and rewarding. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Harper-Davis. I absolutely support your sentiments about a diverse selection, both geographically but also by sector. So absolutely great to see them. Are there any questions or comments that anyone wishes to raise? Can I also initially ask whether, Julie or Verity, whether there are any additional points that you wish to make before we ask any questions?
No, thanks, Leader.
Thank you very much. Councillor Rattray, you've got a question.
Thank you. It's just briefly on the applications that have been declined. I've noticed in the comments that it says that you'll work with those groups to support them to where the application wasn't quite substantial enough to be able to help them get to the next stage. Can we bring to the next kind of the next time the grants come to Cabinet, can we get an update of what's happened with those ones so that we can see the progression on it?
I think just to add to that, I think the reasons for decline are quite diverse. And so it's whether they some of them don't meet the criteria, some of the applications weren't robust. There's been previous issues with some of the organisations that are listed as declined. So this time we've tried to support as many organisations as possible, but there are some that just don't meet the criteria. But the VCS development officers will work with them to try and signpost them to other grants that might be available as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Harper-Davis.
Thank you. Can I just add to that? Actually, we always do that anyway. So the officers always work with the organisations that we decline to actually steer them in the right direction. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions? No other questions. Thank you very much. Councillor Harper-Davis, can I ask you to make the proposal, and then I'm going to ask Councillor Boker to second.
Thank you, Leader. So rather than me read each individual one out, if you're happy to support the recommendations on one and two, on pages one and two, and for the reasons set out on pages one and two. Thank you.
Actually, there are five of them. Is it one to five? Sorry. I think we've got recommendations 1 to 5 for the reasons given 1 to 5.
Yes, it is 1 to 5.
Okay. No problems. Thank you very much. Councillor Boker?
Happy to second, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Verity. Thank you very much, Julie. Okay, we'll now move on to item 7. So that item was approved. So move on to item 7, which is the additional and selective licensing conditions. We have a Scrutiny Commission report for this item, so there's going to be a short interlude while there's a bit of anti-back going on. Anyone wishes to whistle or hum? And then we'll have Councillor Ransom coming to the table. Okay, so for item 7, we're going to be joined by Councillor Ransom, who's going to present the Scrutiny Commission report. If there are any points of clarity that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Ransom, then obviously there's an opportunity to do so before we then move on to the discussion of the main report. So over to you, Councillor Ransom.
Good evening, Leader, and members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving us this time. As you can see with the report, you've all got in front of you item 7, additional selective licensing scheme licensing conditions, which is on your page 49 to 134 of your agenda items. I've got nothing else to actually report on this. We give it a very good overview when on the night, and I do believe it was, and I would actually like to propose that the report be considered and recommended of the Scrutiny Commission in relation to the additional selective licensing scheme and licensing conditions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Are there any questions of clarity that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Ranson? Councillor Smidovich.
Thank you, Leader. Thank you for the report, Councillor Ranson. I must admit, I did note with a wry smile that Southfields was picked out of the whole borough to comment on, and I wondered what was particularly special that Southfields might have been mentioned.
And I think, to be honest with you, I think it was a member of the committee actually was just querying some one or two items was regarding it, and I think Southfield's name was actually mentioned, wasn't it, Alison?
Yes, that is correct.
Pushed the wrong button. I didn't realise I had an additional button. Oh, well, there we go. I've now discovered something new. Thank you. It's quite good, actually. Okay, thank you very much, Councillor. Thank you very much, Councillor Ransom. So, okay, if there are no other questions of clarity, then we'll move on to the main debate. Councillor Ransom, thank you very much for... you've got one other item, I know, but thank you very much for considering this item and Scrutiny Commission, and I'll do a proper thanks after the next item, if that's okay. I think you're probably okay to actually carry on sitting there, so that's okay. So make yourself at home. So we have...
Leader,
with us,
I will definitely do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We also have Councillor... I've demoted you, Alison. We have Alison Simmons, Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing, with us, who's going to assist with any questions or points of information required. But otherwise, if I can ask Councillor Mercer to make some opening remarks. Again, we're taking the report as read. Before we move on to general discussion.
Thank you, Leader. It's a great relief that this particular scheme was first discussed when I was first re-elected to Charnwood in 2015. And I'm sure Councillor Smidovich would be pleased to know that Scrutiny Committee did actually note the work that she'd done in pushing this forward over that period of time. So it's taken a long time to reach this stage. It's also taken a long time this year to actually get it right. And the reason for this delay has been because the greatest threat to this policy was making a mistake in the process of the consultation and of its writing, and the threat of the landlords launching a judicial review, which has happened with a number of councils in the past. And the initial consultation, we didn't have to do two, but the first one had overwhelming support from residents, and the second one on the conditions, surprise, surprise, had overwhelming opposition from the landlords. Now, one of the main complaints was from the landlords was, oh, it's so expensive. But in actual fact, it's £700 over 5 years. If you look at the average cost of an HMO property or a rented property in Charnwood, it works out at less than 1.5% of their gross income, which after tax is less than 1%. So it's not that significant at all. The landlords themselves, unfortunately, let their guard down a bit. If you look at the second consultation on licensing, it's virtually the only people that took part were... 75% of those that took part were the landlords. And what I did was I went a little bit beyond what the figures in the report were, and I asked comms if they could actually separate out precisely how the landlords voted. These are these responsible landlords who told us we did not need licensing because they were very responsible. But when they were actually asked the question, do you think that your properties should comply with fire safety tests, only 25% of them agreed with that, and 62% said, no, we disagree with that condition. When we asked them whether they should make sure their properties were secure, that they should ensure that the locks work, only 29% agreed with that, and 46% were against. And another question, and this, that you see this pattern all the way through the responses, was do you think that we should take reasonable precautions to ensure that their properties are free from pest infestation, which I think is quite a responsible thing, for a necessary thing for any landlord. But in fact, only a third of them agreed with that, and 37% disagreed. So I think, in my view, the responses that we got from the second consultation in itself demonstrates the case that we need to introduce licensing. And this is licensing for HMOs in Charnwood and for all rented properties in what is now Hastings and Leamington Ward. So if the ward boundaries change, it will still be those boundaries. And there's obviously a possibility in the future of extending that, as I know a number of Loughborough councillors would like to see happen. So on that basis, I would like to put forward this report for your consideration.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor. Right, so I'm going to open up for any... before I start, actually, Alison, are there any additional points that you wish to draw attention to?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Barclay.
Yeah, I just, given Councillor Mercer's sort of report, saying that 62% of the landlords didn't want to comply with fire safety regulations, 46% weren't interested in security, and 37% weren't interested in eradicating pests. I wonder whether they could have misunderstood the question, because for their own property, it's not in their interest to do that, is it?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. In relation to pests, I think a lot of the comments that came back were that if the tenant had caused them, then they should deal with them. With the licence conditions, what we really want is the properties to be fit for purpose when people take them on. So this is why we want the security to be right. We want to make sure they're free of pests, etc. And with if they're providing furniture, they've got to obviously be in line with the fire regulations, which is why they've got to certify that they are. So, and I think some of the landlords don't want to provide furniture, but then that's fine. They don't have to adhere to that. But I think a lot of it was more they didn't want the scheme than they don't want the conditions, because I think we have got a number of very good landlords. There is probably a minority of landlords that don't meet the standards that the licence conditions will require. But I think it's probably more of the fact they feel that this is being enforced onto them. And this really, the scheme is a prevention scheme, just like the mandatory scheme. It's to protect the landlord as well, because if there's conditions in place and they meet them, they know they're providing properties that are suitable. But it's also protecting tenants and residents that live in those properties. And the other aspect as well is, as which Councillor Parton raised, was it's about the community. If you've got a licensing scheme in and they're abiding by the conditions, that is assisting the community as well to make sure everyone's living in an enjoyable and pleasurable way rather than having waste piled up on the streets, because I know that one will come up next.
Councillor Harper-Davis.
Thank you, Leader. Alison, obviously we're currently going through an OSB review, and with the licensing scheme, do you think that might reduce the amount of OSB that we get in some of these properties?
I think, as I've already intimated, this is...
Sorry, Councillor Harper-Davis, can you turn off your microphone?
So having a scheme in place is making sure that the landlords that haven't already got like tenancy agreements with ASB within it and making sure people adhere to those conditions. And if there is an issue, then it is reported to the police and the landlord helps with the investigation if there's an incident in relation to the tenants. So as far as the ASB policy, one thing that once these conditions are signed off, there will be a reference to the schemes within that new policy that's come into Cabinet for approval. And we will work with whoever and whatever instance there are to provide the information in relation to landlords and making sure that the landlords play a role in ensuring that ASB doesn't occur. But we, if they breach the licence conditions as set out in the conditions, we will take the necessary enforcement action. And that will be to take the licence away from them.
Thank you very much. Councillor Rawlings.
Thank you. The conditions all seem entirely sensible to me, and I think all it shows is what would be a well-rented property and a well-looked-after property. So I don't think any of us would have had any problem supporting it. I think throughout this whole process, resource has been a concern and making sure that we've got the resource to actually enforce these conditions, because whilst I say they're entirely sensible, if we've not got the officers and staff ready to go out and deal with issues, then they become almost pointless. So I guess it's just some comfort, and I can see it's been mentioned by one of the consultees that they're concerned about resourcing. So I'm just looking for a bit of comfort that we've got sufficient resource to go out and make sure that all of these conditions that we're looking at putting in place can be properly enforced for the benefit of tenants. Thank you.
The licence fee covers the administration and the enforcement of the licence conditions, so that will be resourced. So Cabinet approved in December 2020 for me to have a budget up front until we get the licence fee in to recruit two officers. I have got a structure that I'd like, but I think once we've got the number of licences coming forward, then we can increase that structure to make sure. There are some conditions that we didn't include as part of the analysis that will be picked up under the health and hazard rating and other parts of the Housing Act, which will be picked up through my current resources within the team.
Thank you very much. Councillor Poland.
Thank you. I agree with Councillor Rowling's comments about them being very sensible conditions to have. Did have a question about condition 18, though, tenants' rights, specifically the bit that says giving 24 hours prior notice to entry within HMOs in case of emergency repairs. I guess obviously would be sensible in terms of how we enforce the breach of the regulations where they happen, but I'm just thinking in terms of emergency repair, say a gas leak or a big leak, you know, where maybe the tenants are away. I take it that's how can I phrase this question? In that situation, 24 hours notice is clearly not appropriate. So is it allowed within this policy to where really emergency situations like fire, gas leak, that actually we would understand that and that, you know, and that's made clear that we're talking 24 hours notice, ideally, rather than absolutely, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, the licence conditions wouldn't come into play. If there was a fire or a gas leak, you've got automatic recourse to enter a property to actually to deal with that. Because if you can smell gas again, you can force entry because you've got the safety of everybody else within that accommodation and the surrounding areas.
Okay, thank you very much. Councillor Smithers.
Thank you, Leader. A couple of points. First of all, since 2018, we've had the right to serve civil penalties where there have been breaches of certain conditions. But in the current situation, Alison, would it be possible? Would we know? Have you? I think I've tried to find it whilst I was talking. For the right to rent, is that going to be compulsory for every property, that there will be a list of names of the tenants?
With the right to rent, the details are included in Appendix 5 as to what the general information is and the responsibility of the landlords, because you raised this previously at the members' briefing. So although we can't have it as part of a licence because there's already regulations for it, it's clearly set out in the guidance. So we would ensure that the landlords are aware of that and do meet the requirements of that.
Right.
But we can't do that through a natural condition.
No, right, that's fine. Thank you. And also, I think it's just, again, for the record, that whilst I picked up the point about Southfields being mentioned, sort of a bit tongue-in-cheek, the point I'm trying to make is that the additional licensing is across the borough. And when Professor Darren Smith did his report, there were more private rented accommodation as opposed to student accommodation in the borough. And I often think it's assumed it's students and it's Loughborough. It isn't. It's right across the borough with the spillover from Nottingham in the areas that we don't have licensing and they have licensing, and also from Leicester. So the surrounding villages are very, very vulnerable as well, which is why additional licensing across the borough was absolutely essential to protect the people to the outer corners, as it were. So I just want to make that point that it isn't always students. So thank you.
Absolutely the right point to make. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Nope, we've not got any other questions. Okay, can I go back to you, Councillor Mercer, to make the recommendation? And then I'm going to ask Councillor Smith-Richworth if she would like to second. So over to you, Councillor Mercer. Sorry, Councillor Smith-Richworth, you're a bit too early with the red. There we go.
Thank you, Leader. I would like to propose that Cabinet first note the outcome of the additional and selective licensing scheme license condition consultation exercise, which is contained in Appendix 1 and 2. Second, that we approve the license conditions for the new additional and selective licensing schemes, which are contained in Appendix 3, houses in multiple occupation licensing scheme license conditions, and Appendix 4, selective licensing scheme license conditions. And thirdly, that we approve the use of the houses in multiple occupation licensing scheme license conditions for all mandatory houses in multiple occupation license applications and renewals for the reasons given in the report.
All on page 49. Thank you very much. Councillor Smith-Rich.
Thank you. Before I support that and give it my 100% approval, I would like to thank Alison and her team. I do appreciate there's been an awful lot of work, and also thank our new chief exec, because he's still fairly new, for the support he's given to it. And if we could have champagne tonight in this room, I would have bought a bottle. So I am delighted to actually support it. Thank you, Leader.
Thank you very much. Just for the record, there is no champagne or alcohol in this room. Okay, so can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Alison, as well. So we now move on to item 8, capital plan outturn for 2020-21. I think there's going to be a little bit of anti-backing going on, so I'm just going to carry on for a little bit. So Leslie Tansey, who's our head of financial services, is going to assist when she comes into the room. And otherwise, I'm going to ask Councillor Barclay if you'd like to say a few opening remarks before we move on to the main discussion.
Thank you, Leader. So this is the capital plan outturn report for the year ending 31st of March 2021. You can see that the general fund slippage is of £25,436,900. And the HRA is 2.2 million. Now, the general fund, the main areas of slippage, it's misleading. 15 million of it relates to the enterprise zone, which we just have not been able to spend at the moment. 5 million relates to the town deal. 500,000 relates to the Shepshire Bullring project, and 785,000 are third-party projects which are outside our control. Over the last 4 years, we have spent 38.3 million on capital fund, on general fund capital projects, and 24.8 million on HRA capital projects. The report shows how the capital plan is fully funded, as outlined on page 139. And I haven't got anything up further to add, Leader.
Thank you very much. It's a very clear report as well, so thank you very much. Leslie, is there anything else that you wish to add or draw our attention to?
Thank you, Leslie Tansey. Just to add to that, the HRA budget was 9.1 million. Spend on the HRA was 4 million, and there was an underspend of 5.1 million. We have a slippage request on the HRA as well of 2.2 million. So any underspend on the HRA will go back into the HRA financing fund. The slippage requests that are included in the report will be added to the current capital plan for 21-22, which will be monitored via SLT, the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee, and also the capital plan amendment report will come back to Cabinet in September. in December this year. So we will be monitoring those figures. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's, again, very clear. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or points anyone wishes to raise? Councillor Smitherich. Sorry, Leslie, your button.
I don't want to jump the gun here, but item 7, it talks about town deal and regeneration. I think I've got the right page. It's page 138 on my tablet. But it says the budget is required for 3 projects, and it mentions Limehurst Depot, significant potential for regeneration and lends itself to multiple uses. I wouldn't want to go into what the multiple uses are tonight, but I do would like at some stage perhaps that we might know what those multiple uses were or are.
I think Chief Exec is eager to give a response.
Yes, thank you. So the plan is to update members next week, Cabinet members, that is, at the Cabinet member briefing, following some work on our accommodation review and some of our land asset review. So we should be able to share with you more details, more details next week.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions or any other points? No? Okay, that's great. Councillor Barclay, can I ask you to make the proposal and recommendation?
So I make recommendations 1-4 for reasons 1-4 on page 135 of the report.
Thank you very much. Councillor Rawlings, can I ask you to second?
Thank you, Leader. I'm happy to second this item.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Leslie, for that one. You're staying with us, I know, because item 9 is the General Fund and HRA Revenue Outturn for 2020-2021 and Carry Forward Budget. So if I can ask you, Councillor Barclay, to say a few words about this.
Thank you, Leader. Well, as we all know, last year was a very challenging and uncertain time. The original budget we had was for $19 million. That was revised up to $22.6 million because we were unsure of whether we were going to get funding or what was going to happen. Our performance against the original budget is we've actually come out $1.4 million. Over the original budget, but we are actually on the revised budget $2.2 million to the good. Now, there is this shows that by the performance against the original budget, there is a structural imbalance of circa $1.4 million between the income that we have and the expenditures that we make. The better news is that there is an increase in the working balances of $1.3 million against the predicted use reserve of $0.9 million in the original budget and $1.7 million in the revised budget. The major items which have helped us are the release of a creditor in respect of the enterprise zone of $1.1 million. Net service expenditure came in under by some $2.26 million. Business rates actually generated $0.3 million more through the business rates pool, and the business rates also contributed $0.65 million regarding the enterprise zone. So we got the rates we collected in from there. So the working balances are $5.81 million, which gives us certainly a better position than we thought we were going to achieve. But bearing in mind what I've just said about the need to address the structural deficit year on year of $1.4 million, in other words, reduce expenditure by that level, we are going to have to make some fairly significant transformational changes. And this money will allow us to work towards that. You probably also noticed in the report that there's $7 million in respect to Section 31 grants. What on earth are Section 31 grants? Well, business rates relief was given to a number of businesses this year, and that isn't money that's going to be there for very long because we are going to apply virtually the whole of that $7 million. In other words, we haven't been able to collect the rates, and the government has given us some compensation. And we're going to use that to apply to the various business rates accounts effectively. We have also have other revenue reserves of 0.9 million, which is directly related to the commercialisation projects that we've carried out. You'll see, I think, £25 million worth of borrowing, which we've used to fund the acquisition of commercial premises. And this is a sort of reserve to take account of voids or periods of non-occupancy, but we're just being very cautious with that. As far as the HRA is concerned, we're in a sound position. The collection of the rents has held up very well over the last year, considering what we've been through, and it certainly allowed us to maintain balances of £110 per house. The HRA general balance is £609,000, and the HRA financing balance is £11.6 million. Cabinet will remember that some years ago we borrowed £79 million, and obviously what we're trying to do is build up enough in the financing fund to repay the debt as and when it comes due. It's spread over 30 years at some of the lowest, at the lowest interest rates that we've ever experienced over the last 300 years. So that was good. Most of it's fixed, but it's maturing in tranches, with the first tranche to repay in 2024. But overall, a positive outturn, and it gives us a little bit more firepower to do what we need to do, but we still do have to address the £1.4 million structural deficit between income and expenditure, and that this just rises a bit of breathing space, but good news really. And that's all I've got to say, Leader.
Thank you very much, Councillor Barclay. Extraordinarily detailed and very good to hear. So, Leslie, are there any additional points that you wish to draw attention to?
Thank you. It's Leslie Tansey. Just one point on the HRA. The surplus of £3.3 million was primarily due to not using a revenue contribution to capital because the capital plan was underspent. So that £3.3 million has filtered its way back into the HRA financing fund. And just for information, we are looking and working on the HRA 30-year business plan, which is due to be reported to Cabinet in the autumn. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Okay, are there any other questions that anyone wishes to raise? Okay, I can't see any hands up. So, Councillor Barker, can I ask you to make the recommendations?
Thank you. Thank you, Leader. So I make recommendations 1 and 2 for reasons 1 and 2 on page 144 of the report.
Thank you very much. And Councillor Poland, can I ask you to second?
Very happy to second, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Leslie, as well, and Councillor Barclay. Okay, we now move on to item 10, which is the contain funding. The Chief Exec sitting beside me, Rob Mitchell, is going to help with any points within the report. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about it. Contain funding, by its very nature, is about our support that's been given to us via financing that was supplied to the County Council by the government to help us contain the pandemic. Over the period of the pandemic, we've received about £860,000, specifically ring-fenced for expenditure on items related to the sort of core strategy behind the funding. So far, we've spent about 11% of that, but we have allocated the remaining funds to the items as listed in the report to, again, support our communities over the coming months as the pandemic eases out. So the report sets out, as I said, the basis of the funding, but also what we're intending to spend it on. And hopefully is reasonably clear as to what the intention from the original funding was for. So, Chief Exec, are there any additional points that you wish to raise?
Just to say, Leader, that we are managing the spend of this money through our bi-weekly COVID monitoring group, which is an internal office group, so we will be keeping an eye on the spend through the course of that. And I think it does give us a really good illustration of the range of work that the Council is undertaking and has been undertaking for some time to try and meet the challenges of the pandemic and to support our communities and our partners in other agencies to contain the transmission, and obviously aligns very well with the other work we do to support the vaccination programme as well. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And just to correct, it was 812,000, not 860. I think that's my wishful thinking. Are there any questions? Councillor Harper-Davies.
Thank you, Leader. Probably for Rob, actually. Do we feel that the amount that we've had has been evenly distributed over the districts and the boroughs?
Thank you, through you, Leader. So the money that we've had has been distributed through a formula. It came initially via the government to the County Council and then was distributed in a formula basis, which was selected by the County Council. Then we've had a subsequent single amount from Department for Health and Social Care as well of 200,000, which is noted in the report. So I think the distribution is set elsewhere, and the money that we've had we've used very effectively, but I can't comment really very much further on the distribution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Rawlings.
Thank you. In terms of the additional communication officer post that we've created, is that somebody that's now in post? If not, when will there be in post? Just looking at the figures for that role. Thanks.
So thank you again through you, Leader. The money that we'd had previously for the High Streets Reopening Fund did us allow to already recruit to an additional role. So we've already increased our comms capacity. This money will allow us to increase it further. And I believe the recruitment for that is just underway at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Councillor Smithers.
Can I just make an observation that the number of people that have said our communications over COVID have been superb? Has really been encouraging.
Absolutely agree with that, completely. Absolutely agree with that. All credit to our comms team. Right, if there are no further questions, I'm going to move recommendations 1 and 2 for the reasons given 1 and 2 on agenda page 164. Can I ask Councillor Ratway if you'd like to second?
Very happy to second that one, Leader. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Okay, we now move on to item 11, which is the amends to annual procurement plan. We have Justin Henry, who's our Strategic Director of Commercial Development, Assets and Leisure, who's here to assist with the report. But otherwise, if I can ask Councillor Barclay to say a few words.
Thank you, Leader. It's a requirement that all contracts being 25,000 and 500,000, the list of them is brought to Council. Every year we produce a list of known contracts at the time, and there's a quarterly update. This is the quarterly update, and on Appendix A, on page 7 of the report, all new contracts between 25 and 75,000 are outlined. There's two of them. And in Appendix B, all the contracts between 75 and 500,000 are listed on pages 8 and 9. It's a very standard report. It ensures that we comply with our procurement rules. And there isn't anything else I have to say, Leader.
Thank you very much, Councillor Barclay. Justin, is there anything that you wish to draw our attention to?
Thank you, Leader. No, I think Councillor Barclay has summed it up quite well.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions that anyone wishes to ask? No questions in that case. Councillor Barclay, can I ask you to make the recommendation?
I make recommendations 1 and 2 on page 3 of the report for the reason to allow contracts of the Council to be let in accordance with the contract procedure rules.
Thank you very much. Councillor Mercer, can I ask you to second?
I am happy to second the recommendation, Leader.
Thank you very much. In that case, can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Justin. You now go home. We now move on to item 12, which is the Nampanton Cemetery. We have a scrutiny commission report. So Councillor Ransom has been sitting here waiting eagerly for the second report this evening. Hopefully we'll also be joined by Matt Bradford, who's our head of cleansing and open spaces. So whilst Matt is coming in, we will, here he comes, we will ask Councillor Ransom to give the report from the Scrutiny Commission before asking any questions of clarity.
Thank you again, Leader, and members of the committee. It is actually was very interesting conversations that we had across the round the table on Monday with regarding this item. And we recommend the recommendations of the Scrutiny Commission is that the Cabinet be informed that the Commission welcomes and supports the recommendations set out in the report of the Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces and the reasons behind it that the Commission, having carefully considered and asked questions on the report, felt the Cabinet should approve the recommendations set out. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Are there any questions of clarity that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Ransom? No questions of clarity. Councillor Ransom, thank you very much for both reports this evening. Please pass on our thanks to the committee, and let's hope that the chair is feeling slightly better soon. I know, she's in a bad state. So thank you very much, Councillor. If you wish to stay to listen to this item, by all means do, but otherwise, that's okay. Thank you very much. Okay, so I'm now going to ask Councillor Boker to say a few words on this item before going over to Matt. So, Councillor Boker.
Thank you, Leader. The purpose of this report, of course, is to approve viamonds within the existing capital programme 2023 to support the construction of the new cemetery adjacent to Nampanton Sports Ground. As some of the viaments exceed 50k, this requires Cabinet approval. Our original budget that we requested for this high-profile construction project to start was approved in October 2020, and unfortunately since then it was based on soft marketing costing of all the materials, etc., that were required. And if you think about it, we spent £3.6 million on Bedford Square, £2.6 million on Bedford Square, and we need to go up to £1.17 million for this project. And if you think about it, there is a hell of a lot of hard tarmac that has got to go down, a new driveway, etc., etc. So it's very cost-intensive work, shall we say, because, as we know with Bedford Square, there's a lot of manual work, a lot of digging to do, and unfortunately the costs have gone up since we brought this to Cabinet in 2018 was when we got approval for the new cemetery. I'm sure Matt will explain some of the monies that we've been able to find from the existing capital programme in open spaces, which amounts to £281,000, and we need to start this project as soon as possible because we only have 2 years left of burial ground at the existing cemetery. And I'm not quite sure what we're going to do with the bodies if we run out. So really, we need a good year to get this up and running and finished. Okay.
Thank you very much, Councillor Boker. So obviously, we'll take the report as read, Matt. If there's any points that you wish to draw our attention to, by all means, please do.
Thank you, Leader. If I could just say, with the viaments that we've asked to via into the budget, we are actually trying to keep them consistent with their original purpose where we can. So just to highlight one in particular, the Lodge Farm multi-use games area project was intended to be a replacement for one that was going to be lost at Nampanton Road. The planning permission stipulates that we have to retain it at Nampanton Road, so that really is expenditure in line with its original purpose. And the other one, the community tree planting, the 40k that we've asked there, that will be used for landscaping and tree planting, but specifically within the cemetery project. I don't have anything else to add, and I'm happy to answer any questions that members may have.
Thank you very much, Matt. Okay, are there any questions? The report's pretty detailed. We've had an explanation from Councillor Boker and also points from Matt. Councillor Mercer.
Just a thought on the tree planting. Isn't that a way of actually generating income on the basis that a number of cemeteries plant a tree where your ashes are put, and you obviously pay for that?
It's true to say, through you, Chair, it's true to say that the new cemetery will give us some new commercial opportunities there, and as part of the design of the new cemetery, we are having a natural burial ground that we haven't got at the moment to appeal to a wider audience, and you can do things like plant a tree in those areas to commemorate a loved one. So we are looking at that going forward, something that we could do. But initially, to get the planting scheme delivered within the construction of the cemetery, that expenditure won't bring any income in itself at this stage.
Thank you very much. Are there any additional questions? Okay, thank you very much. In that case, Councillor Boker, can I ask you to move the recommendations on the agenda supplement, page 10?
Yes, certainly. I'd like to move recommendations 1 and 2 for reasons 1 and 2.
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to second that. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Matt, as well. So we now move on to the last item this evening, which is item 13, Health and Safety Annual Report. I was going to say, it's probably not good luck to actually have a Health and Safety Report as item 13. This doesn't bode well, does it? Adrian Ward, who's our Head of Strategic Support, and also Tony Bryan, who's our Corporate Health and Safety Officer, are here to assist with the report. Otherwise, I'm going to ask Councillor Smidovich whether you could say a few words before we move on to any discussion.
Thank you, Leader. The Council's corporate health and safety policy states members of the Cabinet and other elected members shall ensure that suitable resources are made available and take necessary strategic direction to discharge the Council's health and safety responsibilities and monitor via reports the overall performance of the Council's health and safety management systems. And you have before you the report for the preceding year, that's April 2020 to March 2021, which Tony has admirably completed and explained in detail to me when he's been quizzed and questioned, and I learn something new every time I speak to him. So I'm delighted to be able to hand this over to Tony for any questions you have. I think perhaps the one thing I would like to mention was that I've always had a concern about lone workers, and particularly when I used to go out with the street wardens, I always had concerns because I did sort of see a few confrontations. And one of the questions I did ask is whether the cameras are kept on now all the time. Because there have been quite a bit reported in the newspapers. So those were the sort of detailed questions that Tony was subjected to, but I'm sure he'd like to elaborate a little bit further. The number of places, I think, that he has been to ensure our safety, particularly because of COVID this year, has been quite incredible. It's not just the buildings here, it's anything that we've sort of had any links with at all. And the term I learnt this time, which I think he might well still have to explain to me, is soft health and safety. But I think on that I'll leave it to Tony to answer.
Thank you very much. So Tony, we're going to obviously take the report as read, but if there are any points that you wish to draw attention to, by all means please do before we go on to questions or discussions.
Thank you, Leader. My main comment actually is just that the challenges we all are fully aware of, but at every point throughout this period, Charnwood has remained fully compliant with the ever-changing guidance that has been issued often at short notice, but we've always responded to that. And that in itself has been a significant challenge. And my only other personal and professional observation will be just the commitment and the engagement of every officer, heads of service, through line management. The response has been absolutely phenomenal to the challenges that we've had to face.
Thank you very much for those comments. Chief Exec.
Thank you, Leader. Just to say a personal thank you to Tony, who has... The reason we are compliant and the reason we have been able to respond is in large part down to Tony and the hard work he has done, often at very short notice, following rapid changes in government guidance. And echoing Councillor Smidowitz's point, he has been involved in almost every aspect of council business this year, because almost every aspect of council business has been affected by COVID. And I have lost count of the amount of risk assessments he's had to do or redo as a consequence of changing guidance. But everything you can think of this year, it's been Tony and the team associated with Tony in the council, officers from across the council that have had to make those changes to ensure that we can keep running the essential services and also adapt to running new services. So I would like to put on record my thanks to him personally. Thank you, Leader.
Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll echo those comments. Councillor Poland.
Yeah, thank you, Leader, and thank you for the report. Quick question from me, really. Point 15 refers very sadly to someone who passed away as a result of an accident at the Beehive car park. The report clearly says that it's with the Health and Safety Executive, and they, to date, have no further action has been required from them to us. But my question is this, really, when we have serious incidents, and thankfully I don't think we have too many of them, but where they do happen, do we look at those incidents sort of beyond sort of legal responsibility and go, right, is there anything we can do to improve safety in that regard, rather than from a legal point of view, just us ourselves looking at it as an organisation and go, is there any sort of learning we can take from that to improve the safety going forward?
Thank you, Councillor. Yes, I mean, the detail with any investigation is proportionate to the outcome and the potential effects as well. One of the purposes behind any investigation is to drill down to root causes so that, and as much as we can, so far as it's reasonably practicable, that we'd prevent any reoccurrence. In this particular incident, as Charnwood, but also the medical practitioners involved and the Health and Safety Executive, they were unable to make any determination as to whether the fall was as a result of a medical incident, the bleed on the brain, or whether the fall was the cause of the bleed on the brain. And I would say that our response has been entirely proportionate. We have reviewed arrangements in terms of the environment where it occurred. There were no work activities occurring. We were not doing anything at the time that would have caused or affected this incident. But we've been and reviewed the environment in its entirety, the way we operate in there, pedestrian vehicle segregation. It is not possible to say that we would have another reoccurrence of some similar event. The unfortunate reality is that these events, medical events, occur and people suffer falls. So to answer your question, yes, we learnt our lessons through it. We've reviewed other working arrangements and we review as well the way that we operate in similar and other environments.
Thank you very much for that. Are there any further questions? Councillor Mercer and then Councillor...
A couple of questions, Tony. I think it's quite remarkable that the number of accidents and incidents has actually dropped by more than half. Is that because people simply weren't at work, or have people been acting particularly carefully during this period? And secondly, on that sad fatality, it obviously wasn't one of our employees, and it wasn't work-related. Why was it? I thought only work-related incidents had to be reported. Or am I wrong?
Thank you, Councillor Mercer. If I answer the second question there first. On this occasion, I contacted the Health and Safety Executive directly by telephone in order to ask that self-same question. and it is better in these instances, err on the side of caution. It's better report than not report. The accident was in no way related to a work activity, but as we are in control of the environments where it occurred, then it was prudent for us to ask the question. The response I got from the Health and Safety Executive was report. So if in doubt, report. I would not wish to report something unnecessarily. To respond to the question about the accidents, I'd absolutely concur. It is people are a lot more careful about what they do, how they do it, and how they choose to do something. We have, in effect, even though the work environment that we operate in terms of the buildings that we work in are very low risk, by working at home we've reduced that risk even further. So that in some way has led to that fall. And for a number of months, we were delivering limited service. So we have to recognise that as well as being a contributory factor to the reduction. The test, as it were, will be in the coming 2-3 years and to see where the rates go to or if they remain at a similar level, so that some of the soft skills and the behavioural skills that we picked up in terms of safety and looking after oneself and looking after your colleagues and others, whether that's maintained. But certainly part of the reduction was reduction in what we do and where we do it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Councillor Rogers.
Thank you. Obviously, it's an incredibly rare occurrence that officers would have to deal with any kind of fatality or serious injury, but I can see there's mention to staff wellness at the end of the report, but do we have any specific procedures in place to provide support to members of staff, whether that's officers that have had to investigate from a health and safety point of view or have in any way been involved in any serious injury or fatality? Because I'm conscious that other services, emergency services, for example, have protocols in place if people have been to a particularly dramatic scene where they've had to see things that they wouldn't ordinarily see and what the average person won't see. So I'm, like I say, it's rare for us to have that occurrence, but I'm wondering what support we have in place in case our officers either are involved in or have to subsequently look into, from a health and safety point of view, something that's particularly traumatic.
Chief Exec.
Thank you, Leader. So we have a range of welfare support for staff, including counselling, that they can access. Tony may wish to comment if there is anything specific in relation to a traumatic event. But if, from my understanding of our policies, that would be picked up in the course of the line management work, that the officer would have support through there and then through their access to our HR team and some of the counselling services that we have. I'm not aware, Tony may be able to comment further, but I'm not aware that we have a specific policy or service related to trauma, because it is, as you say, quite a rare occurrence. But because it's a rare occurrence, anything of that nature, we would wrap around from a line management point of view support for the member of staff. Thank you.
If you wish me to add any more, no, there is no specific policy or procedure in place for that. Throughout our investigation, then we were extremely mindful about the well-being of the officers who had been receiving information from family members of the deceased person and who were the principal point of contact for Charnwood with the family. And they certainly were offered all the support that they needed at that time, and will continue to do that.
Thank you very much. Okay, so thank you very much, Tony, for your comments. Can I ask Councillor Smidovich to make the recommendations?
Yes, Cabinet are asked to note the Council's health and safety performance over the preceding year, as set out in the appendix, for the reasons given.
Thank you very much, and that's on page 181. And Councillor Perlin, can I ask you to second?
I second that, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Can I thank everyone this evening, and also particularly thank our officers, those who are present still and those who have left this evening. And also thank you very much to Karen and Laura particularly for helping to prepare and make this meeting as safe as possible. So good evening, everyone, and I'll now formally close the meeting.